Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the podcast, I was lucky enough to be joined by Ed Miller and Matthew David Au, authors of The Logic of Sports Betting, which if you'd like to purchase, there's going to be a link to purchase that book in the description of this podcast. Ed and Matthew are two of the sharpest people that I have read or, you know, heard publicly speak about the sports betting industry, and you guys know from listening to this show, I'm very curious about sports betting. I would very much like to get better at it, and I would like the listeners of this show to be able to get better at it as well, and that was really kind of the central focus of our conversation. You know, of course, we talked about the book, but also about ways that people can be better, be good at sports betting right now, and not just, you know, give money away to the book. So I think that you guys are really going to enjoy this conversation. Of course, if you want to support the show, patreon.com/takecast, $5 a month gets you bonus episodes of the show and helps support the show. You can also support the show by subscribing to dailyroto.com and using the promo code Janus in order to do so. Or if you don't want to spend any money at all you have to do would be leave a rating or review on iTunes or the Google Play Store, wherever you listen to podcasts. All of that would be very useful and helpful. And now let's go ahead and get into the show. All right, everyone, welcoming in the authors of The Logic of Sports Betting, Ed Miller and Matthew David Au, to the podcast. I finished this book about, I think about 5 days ago, and like I got about a chapter into it, and I realized like I had to have Ed and Matthew on the show because I just found the book supremely interesting. So of course, Ed, I just want to start with why write the book? Why not keep a lot of this stuff to yourself? Why write The Logic of Sports Betting?
Right. So we kind of like, obviously the sports betting industry is at a little bit of a turning point now. It's, you know, with the Supreme Court case, and now it's expanding across the country. At least this was certainly my thought, and I think Matthew too, is that the industry could kind of take one of two routes going forward, you know, and really it has to do with how educated the customers are going to be. So, the industry has this kind of tendency to think, everyone who bets on sports is just ignorant, and they're just blasting off 20 team parlays trying to catch a score. And they kind of pigeonhole the customers into that box a little bit. And the more the industry kind of falls into that trap of thinking about sports betting that way, the more they kind of, everything kind of builds towards that. And in my opinion, that product kind of sucks, right? Like, okay, right. It's fine. Like it's, that's fine. I don't have anything against that. But to me, the sports betting industry could be so much more than that. And kind of my thought was what needs to happen for the industry to evolve to kind of a better, more robust place. And to me, that's education. That's educating, you know, sports bettors to understand how this stuff works. Where did these lines come from? You know, what are you actually betting into when you bet something, and answer all those questions for the customers, because, you know, my opinion was a more educated customer is going to demand a better sports betting product. And in the end, that's better for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think that is true. And Matthew, I explain your involvement in the book, how and you and Ed kind of linked up for this project.
Well, in following what Ed was saying, we've a lot of skin in the game. You know, it's hugely to our company's benefit and our personal benefits as far as, you know, what we want out of our careers to see the industry in the U.S. develop the way we think it should develop, a way with, you know, perceived fairness to the customer, a way where analytics plays a high role, where it matters with the, you know, chances of our making a fourth down, not just with a, you know, high hole. Do you like the Seahawks or the, you know, Eagles today? As far as me and Ed go, we've been working on live modeling for 5 years now, Ed?
Yep, about 5 years.
Time flies.
Yeah.
and, you know, just very recently started kind of aiming our efforts toward the, toward the U.S. market, since it's, you know, obviously now opened up, and, you know, the book was, sort of an introduction to that as far as our change of, business.
So, Ed, what do you think the major market impacts of legalization of sports gambling in the United States have been? Like, you know, we're now seeing it in New Jersey. We're seeing it in Pennsylvania. I believe Michigan just passed their legislation last week, though they have not started offering. And not even all the markets where sports betting is legal has mobile betting been legalized as well. But, you know, one of the sections I found most interesting of the book was just like the question of who sets the line, how much does sharp money matter? How much does public money matter? Because I would say that's the number one thing that like people on Twitter argue about, which is like, oh, well, and we had a great example of this with Clemson LSU. Everyone on Twitter just insisted that Clemson was the sharp side. All the sharp money was on Clemson. All the quote unquote public money was on LSU. And that if I understood the chapter of your guys' book correctly, and I'm not saying that I did for sure, the illusion of sharp and public money is just that. Sometimes it is an illusion. Am I wrong or right about that, Ed?
Yeah, so like certainly for just like kind of your everyday games, and even for, you know, like your basic college football games or college or NFL football games. I mean, the way the lines get made is the lines really get made by sports books. The way the lines get made is a price discovery process where basically someone puts up a line and then they let people bet and then they move the line based on the betting action. That's how the lines get made. Now, some sports books don't really take that approach. They don't really want to move the line based on action, and they don't really necessarily always want to let everyone bet. They want to let, you know, certain customers bet, and they sort of restrict other customers. So there's some sports books. The more a sports book takes action from everybody and moves a line based on that action, the more influence they're going to have over that pricing. Now, because those books only, like some of the books restrict people and other books don't, well, the sharper, stronger bettors tend to bet more, you know, at these market making places. And therefore, you know, they tend to have an outsized effect on where the pricing is for any market. So for instance, let's say it's a, you know, a regular college football game, you know, where, you know, Ball State is plus 17 or whatever it is. And where does that plus 17 number come from? Well, it comes because, you know, some sports books somewhere are taking action and moving that line, and that's where they have the line now. And now that line often gets kind of copied or mostly copied by other sports books. So it's sort of complicated, but the short answer is that really there are a few key sports books where, you know, their action matters more than kind of the rest of the market. And those sports books tend to have a little more sharp action, which is why we, you know, people kind of say, well, it's not the public that determines where the line is. It's more the sharp. Now it's funny you bring up the Clemson game because it's sort of an exception to that rule. The really, really high profile games, like the national championship game, you know, the Super Bowl, or, you know, any really super high profile game that gets an absolute ton of public interest. Well, then, you know, there's so much public money that sportsbooks have to kind of give it respect, and that kind of muddies the picture a little bit.
I think a very important point here is that no sports book actually balances their action. The corporate sports books, I mean, heck, they go so far out of their way to not balance the action, and then they complain about their giant positions.
Right.
I mean, I remember the Super Bowl last year when every, oh my gosh, New Jersey is going to lose this much. I'm like, well, you know, they're allowed to move the line. They make it out like they're just required to sit there on whatever they think the, you know, quote, market line is and let people play over and over again on one side. And obviously, they can move the line and balance the action. And in these big games like the LSU-Clemson, you know, while it's an exception, and I do think that every quarter, people that win were on Clemson and people that win and don't win were on LSU is how one way I would put it. But at the same time,
that's bad news for me. I definitely bet on LSU. So, now, your description of someone who wins and loses would definitely be me.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean that I don't think anybody that bet on Clemson, like, it's one game, and heck, they beat them by 17. If the line were played again tomorrow, it'd be 6. I mean, I think you were right. I had Clemson plus 6. I didn't have Clemson plus 4, which is kind of the point I was making, is that the sharp money is kind of what puts the line to where it's at. So while it was true that the sharp money was on Clemson, or so to speak, well, the sharp money was on Clemson at 5.5 and 6. It wasn't taking 4.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that probably the biggest lesson of your guys' book, and just that any really good sports bettor would tell you overall, is that it's so much more about the numbers you get than the side that you are on. Like Clemson, LSU, it's sort of immaterial versus the you know, one betting syndicate gets Clemson +6, and they get it at +105 instead of Clemson +6 at -110. Like, there's even a difference relative to the exact number that you're getting it at. And I mean, that is from someone who comes from, you know, like, I play a lot of DFS, and that obviously is a lot of, like, very micro projections, right? Like, figuring out, okay, is Michael Porter Jr. going to play 24 or 26 minutes tonight for the Denver Nuggets? That's actually a really material question for the activity of daily fantasy sports, whereas sports betting, at least the way I understood it, Ed, a big thing that I took away from your book is that it's really trying to just always make, like, the right macro decision in terms of the number that you are getting, why you are getting it, and also projecting the price of what you're about to bet moving forward.
Yeah, I mean the pricing matters a ton. I mean, it, you know, for sports betting, and really it's you know, I mean, that, to me, that's kind of a big, I mean, it's a cliche, but obviously that is definitely a big difference between people who take sports betting more seriously versus less seriously. Is, you know, it really is about kind of, you know, looking at the price you're getting, and, you know, as Matt was saying, you know, oh, I'm not just, it's not that the sharps are on Clemson, it's that the sharps are on Clemson at +6, you know, and then when the line moves, you know, that's no longer, you know, the quote unquote sharp side anymore. That concept becomes kind of meaningless once the line moves.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just saying, if I make 1,000 bets over the course of a year, $10,000 each, 1 cent is $10,000.
Yeah.
1 cent for $5,000. But
I mean, so I think that's another really good point, which is, you know, the sports betting industry. So not the retail sports books, not the market makers, not the whales who are, you know, not the syndicates, but, you know, the Bleacher Report betting people, or all these people from daily fantasy sports who are now transitioning over into, sports betting coverage. I think a huge thing that is not communicated, and this is something that I have, of course, I'm sure if you go back and read some of my sports betting stuff from over the last year or so, this is stuff that I'm missing, because you got to really bet a lot to start to learn this stuff, which is, you know, the concept of the sharp money, or, you know, the public side. So much of that stuff is related to the number that you're getting it at. And you're just like, you know, when you're watching the daily wager on ESPN or whatever, they're not talking about the difference between betting a side at -130 or betting it at +105, and how that impacts your ROI over the long term. And I think that's something that your book was very good at, you know, just highlighting the importance of that, really.
Yeah, I think one final kind of thing to say about that is like a lot of that stuff about the sharp side and the like a lot of that stuff. I mean, there is some reality to that, like, you know, like you said, I mean, there were a lot of people that were on Clemson. But the thing that I think is the important point is that by the time you hear it on a show or on a podcast,
it's already moved.
It's in the past, right? You know, so it's not really actionable. It's often not actionable information.
Yeah, and I just think that's something that I mean, I don't know if that'll ever really change in the sense of, like, the super mainstream media coverage of sports betting. And also, I mean, one of the big things that I wanted to talk to you guys about is what happens when the United States, you know, one of the richest countries on earth, you know, in terms of disposable income relative to each citizen, you know, the United States, despite a lot of our political issues and problems and inequality, still has a lot of disposable income relative to the rest of the world. What happens when all 50 states have legalized sports gambling and you have public sides hitting everything from, you know, instead of the Super Bowl being this game where billions of dollars are wagered, we have hundreds of millions of dollars being wagered on everything. We have mid-major college basketball markets getting hit. We have player props getting hit to such a greater extent, like, kind of forecast out that the legalization and impact of more money in the market for me, Ed.
I kind of want to throw this one to Matt, because I want to hear what
he says. I mean, yeah, that's fine too.
I'm curious what he's gonna say.
So this is so at, as we see it grow now, we see most states that are legalizing or taking some form of, I hate to use the word euro because it just happens to be that that's where this business model is like really worked. You know, more corporate form of like bookmaking where they try to stick out a reasonable line. Most of the lines are absolutely reasonable. They have a big hold. And then for the most part, people that are trying to find that, you know, that extra 2 cents left and right and trying to, you know, really skim down and into their hold and even turn it around, those people are severely limited and or in many forms shown the door. In that reality, what'll end up happening is you'll have like major syndicates that'll be sneaking all the bets in through the back door that'll make millions and millions of dollars with this like sneaking money in through the back door, you know, scenario. And the corporate books will do very well. A much better scenario for the whole market, which I do think that this will come, is something a little bit closer to like how the financial sector works, where there will be a market maker or two that will be operating in most states where the limits will be reasonable, where the holds will be reasonable, where people can actually, you know, bet. And if that happens, what you're going to see is a much, much tighter market. A tighter market and a scenario where the big winners are really the market makers and the regulators, and less so the people that can, you know, handicap the college, you know, NC Greensboro at, you know, the Citadel game tonight.
Yeah, like, I mean, that – go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's a certain amount of leverage that – I mean, it's, the reason why I wanted to throw it to him is because it's a very interesting question about what happens, because right now the whole market is, you know, it's – like I think about, you know, look what happened after Hurricane Katrina. I'm from New Orleans, you know, and in Hurricane Katrina, as soon as that happened, like the vast majority of the city flooded, an entire population of like 300,000 people left the city. And half of them ended up in Baton Rouge. And you got this little town in Louisiana that had, you know, that was used to having 150,000 people. All of a sudden it had 300,000 people and they had to figure out what to do about it. You know, and I kind of see something similar is going to happen here, is that they have this whole system set up now where they've got, you know, okay, these books are the market makers and they take the action, blah, blah, blah. And then now we, you know, this place copies the line and they do business, you know, roughly the way Matt was describing. And now all of a sudden, like if in the matter of a year or two, all of a sudden you jam like a whole lot more money into that system. And I think in play is also going to be a huge, you know, jamming money into a system that doesn't really exist right now. And I'm really curious because it's really going to try the you know, it's going to be extremely trying for the operators because of what Matt said. There's going to be people looking for angles everywhere possible in this new system. And it's you know, and they're going to find them. They're going to find the angles. And I'm just really curious to see how the industry reacts to that.
Another thing that I think is going to happen in America that has somewhat already happened in Europe, and I'm not sure how many of like, you know, our listeners, almost all of the people that bet the game that aren't sitting in an office, you know, delving into it at 8:30 a.m., everybody bets within about an hour from when the game starts and or throughout the game. They're, you know, like right now, if you look at like, you know, the action at, you know, DraftKings New Jersey right now, it's probably very, very low. Everybody that is going to, and they will take many bets on these NBA games and college basketball games tonight. They're all going to happen within an hour of the game. And right now, the way the industry works is it almost feels like they care just as much about their product right now as they do a half an hour before the game. And to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And a lot of what we're trying to do with our business and, you know, our message to the industry is people want to watch the game. They want to be engaged in the game. They want to watch all the games all year. They don't want to lose their money too fast. And if with 50 states open, and like you say, the, you know, billions in recreational spend that is in the United States, if that gets used in a way, in a recreational way throughout the game and not, you know, people
just before the game starts, yeah,
and during the game I think we'll see a, like, you won't recognize it from today.
Yeah, like, I mean, that is That is, I mean, it is very interesting to think about how much the U.S. market makers will try and push the in-game live stuff, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit, because that's a big focus of your book. But one of the other things that I really wanted to talk about was something that probably a lot of people who listen to this podcast are more attuned to. And it is, this is, I think, one of the market differences between European bookmakers and like European sports betting touts and European sports bettors. Obviously, it's like a much more common thing. Like everyone has, you know, the Paddy Power app or whatever on their phone. If you live in Britain, like it's just what you do. Like guys, like casual sports talk radio in Britain, like guys will talk about, you know, their 10 team parlay or whatever that they made. But player props for American sports bettors are, it's a much more familiar transition because it's pretty much one-to-one from fantasy sports. Like, oh, I like this guy in fantasy. I'm going to bet over, you know, 89 receiving yards for Julio Jones, whatever. And everyone who knows a little bit about sports betting knows, well, you can't really get that much down on these props if you try and bet, you know, or if you're really good at them. You know, if you win six player props in a row, your whatever book it is, even the retail books will probably limit your how much you can get down on those props moving forward. But I actually think this is a potential area of growth in the American market where they won't actually have to limit people because, in my opinion, Ed, this is something that like DraftKings and FanDuel, their sports books, they should really be marketing this when they enter into a new market because it's such an easy transition from what people already know.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the player props are kind of a natural here. I think they are, you know, more of a natural here than they are for, you know, overseas. And I think what we're going to see is those markets get sharper, bigger, and more robust. You know, right now, you know, the way the player props were kind of an afterthought, even here. I mean, even here in Las Vegas, you know, they were kind of like, you know, you would go to an NFL game and they might not even have player props for an NFL game, even a couple years ago. And now, you know, the places here are starting to say, okay, well, let's make some props for the, you know, at least certainly the primetime games. But really it's that, you know, and I agree with you. I think it's going to be, you know, there's a lot of interest in player props and I think there's going to be more and more of a market. And I think, you know, they're going to be seen less as like a loss leader or a point of vulnerability and more of a little bit of the core product, a little bit more going forward, you know?
Yeah. And also another thing is, Matthew, do you think that at some point we will start to see in-game live prop betting as like we saw it a little, like I was kind of monitoring some of the markets this last week and I saw like second half, like over 140 passing yards for Deshaun Watson. And that was actually the first time I can remember on the book that I use seeing that live.
I do think we're going to get a situation, especially in the, you know, the standalone games, the games that, you know, everybody's – when there's only one game on.
Right.
Where we'll have a situation like, you know, Travis Henry this weekend, and there's no reason that a book shouldn't offer a, you know, in running line on, say, Travis Henry rushing yards. It's definitely something people are interested in. I definitely think it's something that would, you know, get bet. Now, the problem with that is it would be very hard to, you know, set an accurate – in-game line on Travis Henry.
Those lines are hard to make because you know, as you know from fantasy, you know, there's a lot of, you know, if you read the tea leaves on usage and on player usage, you know, you can get a lot of edge, you know, on fantasy. You know, it's like what you were talking about. Is this guy going to get 26 minutes or 24 minutes? Well, think about how much work you put into that problem. And then think about, okay, now it's the third quarter and the team's ahead by 10. And is this guy going to get 10 minutes or 8 minutes, you know, in the rest of the game? You know, and that's a huge leverage point. I mean, you try to set a line where, you know, it's impossible to set a line on these props where that's almost not the deciding factor on the prop, right? Whether the guy gets 10 minutes or 8 minutes, you know, going forward. And the thing is, it's always going to be to the bettor's advantage there, because the bettor's the one actually watching the game. You know, the bettor is anyone who's looking at that prop is presumably thinking about these things, right? Or, you know, most of that audience.
Whereas the second half prop or the live prop is either like an algorithmic thing or was set to be the line and just offer it at half regardless of what the score line effects would be.
Right. I mean, you know, I mean, our business, I mean, we sit here all day and we make a zillion lines in play on this stuff. Well, I'm telling you, if you ask me to make a line on, you know, how many more points so-and-so is going to get, you know, halfway through, I mean, that would be like, you know, because it's just really hard. It's a very hard problem, you know, from my perspective. And I'm always going to feel like whoever's on the other end of that bet is going to be coming at that line with more information than I have making a line. That's not to say 100% I think people are going to try to make those lines. But what happens when you have markets like that that are really hard to make a line is that the operators understand that the lines are really, really vulnerable. So they start to take defensive measure. They put huge VIG on it. They put, you know, minus 120 or, you know.
The player prop VIG stuff right now, like if you go to get a player prop and you think it's really good, like there was, I've used this example on like 6 podcasts now because it's one of the most mispriced props I've ever seen. But it was just the other night, Kemba Walker was out and Gordon Hayward's rebounds, points, assists was 28.5. Now the bet did not end up winning, but it like from our projections, that was off by like 10. So it was off like a factor of like almost 40%.
Right.
And the VIG on this bet, because obviously I was not the first one to bet, it was like minus 140. And right. our stuff still had that as a bet. But that's an example of like, if you think you're getting a really good number, you're probably getting a horrible price, basically.
Yeah, they're gonna, and that's not to say that you won't have an edge on that stuff even, you know, without, you know, even with the -4, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this stuff, I mean, the line is so hard to make and the edge can be so large that, I mean, you're gonna find bets. I mean, there's bets in game where literally they'll put it up at minus 150, right? So the break-even percentage is 60%. But, like, that bet's gonna win 85% of the time, right? That's a thing that you'll see in play. And you'll certainly see that kind of thing on these player props, you know, especially if they try to do them in play. So I think it's interesting because I 100% think the operators will try to offer them because for sure there's demand for it. It's just, I don't know what the end product's going to be like because they're not going to be willing to lose on them, you know, like they would if they kind of offered them straight up. So.
Well, I think if you look at what we – like, think about what we could actually provide, Ed, for, say, again, my Travis Henry.
Derrick Henry, right?
Derrick Henry, yeah. Travis Henry, you go under that one. Thank you. But if this was a regular Sunday game or even a regular standard, like a regular thing, it would be very hard. But because it's the championship game,
right, there'd
be lots of action. We'll have – all of our top traders will be here. Like,
yep.
Like myself or other two top traders, if all we had to do was price, say, 4 player props the entire game, watching the action come in and moving them, I'm sure we could put a very accurate number up there. Now, if we had to count on a model or we had to, you know, have a, you know, more novice trader doing it, it would be a terrible price. So I think it's doable in the bigger games and the bigger situations.
Yeah.
With, you know, the talented traders, and much less so on like an overall standpoint. Like, I don't think we're going to see on a Sunday afternoon where someone's going to have like a kitchen sink approach to like every single running back, how many yards they're getting during the game, you know, up on every timeout with, you know, reasonable holds and taking all action. I mean, like you said, I mean, anybody doing work would just kill that product. But me putting up a line on whatever Henry's first name is this weekend, I think it would be a reasonable thing.
Yeah, like on a Monday Night Football or, you know, on a playoff game or certainly, you know, like a college football championship game or, yeah, for sure. You know, any game where it's going to make economic sense to devote your top talent, say, hey, your job is, you know, running back player props, go,
uh-huh.
You know.
The point
any,
I'm
any
trying
game
to...
where that makes sense, yeah.
Yep, exactly. Sure. I think it's a top talent issue and you can't model it.
Right.
So this will coincide with our live betting conversation, which is that there are probably people listening to this who have heard me talk about sports betting on this podcast. Maybe they want to read your guys' book, but they want to start sports betting. And, you know, I had this conversation with Rufus Peabody when he came on the show. And I think you guys will probably have a different answer than Rufus, which was he just told people don't ever start sports betting if you want to turn a profit. But if you guys – you're meeting someone, you're giving someone advice, and they want to deposit $500 and get the deposit bonus from FanDuel, DraftKings, whoever, and they want to start trying to sports bet and make a little bit of money. You know, they don't want to beat the bookie. They're not trying to crush the book or make a living, but they just want to do it in a plus EV way. What would be your just kind of simplistic beginning advice to that person?
Go ahead, Matt.
Promotions.
Yeah.
Take advantage of all the promotions. It's if you have a free $50 bet on Clemson, you get the same sweat value and you have plus EV than if you have a regular 55 to win 50 bet on it.
Yeah, so for sure the promotions. I mean the main point we make in the book is that the kind of the key idea is to try to get the hold to zero. We call it like a synthetic hold. So what that means is basically you're looking at two markets that are either the same market or in a market that's relatable, you know, one to another with fairly easily done math. So the same market would be, you know, just like a money line on a game, you know, whether Clemson's going to win or LSU's going to win. That's, you know, the same market at every book. You know, on a player prop, it would be the same player over or under the same number, you know, 68.5, say. That would be the same market. You know, or a related market, if you find someone, you know, you find 69.5 at one place, 68.5 at one place, those are related markets. But unfortunately, there's always work to do whenever it's a related market because you have to do the math of trying to figure out exactly how those two markets are related. But the idea is basically to try to find markets at two different sports books where the prices, you can combine one bet at one place and one bet at the other place and create a zero hold market. So if you can find a book that has, you know, plus 110 on one side at one book and minus 110 on the other side at the other book, well, that's a zero vig market, right? Plus 110 here, minus 110 there. You can kind of flip a coin and play into those two lines, and you're not going to lose because there's no vig between those two numbers, you know? So now, so that would be what that would be my recommendation. If you wanted to put time into it and you want to say, hey, let me get good at this, your first job is to learn, is basically to watch a bunch of lines, you know, and try to find those zero vig, you know, markets, get a sense for when those zero vig markets appear, why they appear, and that's really, to me, the first step.
I mean, this is going to sound very simple, but to me, the easiest way to look at it is if I'm only allowed to play in if I have one book and I have no other information, and I'm simply looking at a line that's, you know, minus 110 on both sides, if I bet $100, I am going to lose $5. I know nothing. If I have 20 different books, and at the same time, I can bet one side at minus 110 and the other side at plus 115, I don't have to know anything and I'm going to win a little bit of money. And to me, if you really want to win at sports betting, it's as simple as that. It's as simple as is doing the work to find opportunities where you really don't have to know anything about what you're betting, and the hold is then working in your advantage. Whether you choose the minus 10 or the plus 115 or a little both, at the end of the day, you'll end up winning if you have the ability to bet both numbers at the same time. And that can be taken from what seems like very simple, like, wait a second, I'm not allowed to know anything. Well, yeah, to start with, but that can be taken – that concept can be taken all the way out to where you're, like, you know, completely modeling an NFL game or a college basketball game to, you know, coming up with a number and then looking at the different prices. It's that concept that really gets you from you're just going to lose to, yeah, you can absolutely win.
Yeah. Okay. So the last thing that I want to talk to you guys about is probably my biggest pet peeve. And this was actually something that I was able to realize myself, even before reading the book, which was you'll always see this when you see popular media members in the United States cover gambling, which is like the concept of, like, Vegas knows, right? Like they'll point to a game that ends 1 point under the total or 1 point over the total, and they'll say, oh, well, Vegas knew. Or they'll point out big line movement before a game where one side blows the other side out, and that corresponds to the, you know, the Vegas knows type mythology. And I think that is One, really daunting for people who are just trying to get into sports betting, thinking that they're up against this unbeatable monolith. And as the book does a great job pointing out, sports betting is actually a multiplayer game, and you're playing against a lot of other people, not just the book. So what I wanted to throw to you guys was your best, you know, it could be an analogy, could be an example, or just an explanation of why the Vegas knows mythology is wrong, basically.
To me, it's a narrative. It's the same as saying Lamar Jackson can't win a big game. If a couple of plays had gone slightly differently in that game, no one would be saying that. And I think the Vegas knows is very similar. You pick the right game and you pick the right narrative where the ball bounced a certain way, and there's your story. What do you think, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. I mean, from, you know, coming from a more mathematical angle, right? So these lines get set by price discovery. So basically they're set because bettors, mostly the smarter, sharper bettors, are betting them into place, right? So for the most part, these lines are roughly where they should be. And then the outcomes of the game are on a distribution or on a curve, right? So if you look at, you know, it's like saying the average American man is 5'11", and then I meet you and you're 5'11", and I say, see, I knew. You know, it's like, well, there's a lot of people that are 5'11". That's how it works, right? And, you know, there's a lot of people that are 6 feet tall. And then you meet someone who's 6'8", and you're like, you know, I mean, I don't know.
It's Matt just, told me to bet over.
Right, Matt told me to bet over, and look at how tall you are, right? So, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, to me, it's as simple as that. I mean, what you're doing is, you know, there's a bunch of samples where, you know, okay, the line is 8 and someone wins by 12. Well, who knew there? I don't know. So, you know, it's just people picking out, you know, like Matt said, narratives where it just happened to line up exactly right. And, you know, it just feels like there's some supernatural power going on. I don't know.
Yeah, it is one of those things where people see the result and they say, see, I knew, or see, they knew. And it is, and I think that is, I mean, obviously, Americans just were not holistically, we're not very good at math. And I'm not even that good at math. Like, I'm not a math whiz by any stretch of the definition, but like, even I know, and even I knew, like, kind of intuitively, like, well, no, Vegas doesn't know anything. It's just, you know, it's just one of those things. They flip the coin enough times and they hit. So, guys, I want you to, you know, sell the book a little bit. There will be a link to purchase it in the description of this podcast, and then tell the people about Deck Prism Sports as well.
Yeah, sure. So the book's called The Logic of Sports Betting. It came out last year in May, so it's not even a year old yet. It's really, you know, we wrote it with the goal of kind of educating the American bettor, kind of getting everyone up to speed on everything you need to know about how the industry works and where the lines come from. And then a lot of the stuff we talked about here where, you know, how to go about kind of looking at sports betting markets and maybe figuring out how to get an edge. So we try to do that. You know, it's not a ton of math. It's I think a pretty good, easy read. And I think it's really a good source of information. So that's the book. And do you want to talk about Deck Prism, Matt?
Sure. So, We're a live odds managed trading provider, which is more or less a B2B company. We are currently using our market tested, what used to be betting models for, you know, NFL, college football, college basketball, Major League Baseball, and NBA. And we're basically pointing them toward a, industry solution. As Ed likes to say, we're building the nuts and bolts of what I think at some point will be when, like you said, when there's 50 states and everybody turns on their TV and everybody wants to watch the baseball game, at that point, it really matters who's pitching next. It really matters, you know, exactly what their chance of striking out the next batter is. If you want an engaging product throughout the whole season that won't take everybody's money, that won't have the DFS problem of simply taking the money from the fish and, you know, giving it to the sharper people as fast as possible, then you know, as I think the DFS companies proved with that, you need very, very accurate analytics. And that's what we're passionate about. That's what we spend our day on.
Yeah. So basically we make lines all, you know, on games every day. So we make in-game lines. So there's college basketball games tonight. We're going to have our crew is going to be there using our tool and our model, producing live lines in game, and those lines are our customers is going to be sportsbook operators who are going to then offer those lines to their customers. And the whole idea is we do a better job of making the line, therefore they can offer you a lower hold. They don't have to put delays on it. They could basically offer you a better bet because we're putting in the work to make that line sharp. So that's basically the idea behind what we're doing, and we think overall it's going to make a better, basically a more fun in-play betting experience, you know, going forward.
There we go, everyone. I really do recommend it. Those of you who listen to the show, you enjoy the guests we have on, you will really enjoy the book. Everybody, I never have authors of books on the show if I don't think that the book was, one, very good, and two, that the listeners of the show would really like it. And this book satisfies both of the cases. And if you like the book, you're also going to enjoy Deck Prism Sports as well. Ed and Matthew, thank you very much for the time, and good luck.
Awesome.